third hour on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon here in Middle Tennessee. I mean, absolutely gorgeous. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you, now joined by Mike Florio. Pro Football Talk, he now joins us. Mike, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, Mike Vrabel wrapped up mini camps last week. We played his press conference live because it was during our show as they were going to go away for 5 weeks and then get ready for training camp. But I had the under on vaccination questions, so that was a losing ticket. It was the over on number of questions that he got on vaccinations. As you could tell, the coach really was ready to move on past the vaccination questions. But in all seriousness, how big of a deal is this around the league? And you've seen how the league is going to handle this. And they can't make these players get vaccinated, but they've kind of laid out the parameters. Okay, if you choose not to, this is how you will be treated and what you will have to do. How do you think the players will use these next 5 weeks? Maybe the players who are on the fence or don't want to, do you think they're going to be thinking about this going into training camp, or how do you think that'll be handled?
Well, as of Friday, 55% of all players had been vaccinated. And I think the hope has been that as the players realize on their own what the advantages are of being vaccinated, the disadvantages of not being vaccinated, they will come to the conclusion that they should do it. And it's very different than the usual approach we see from a football coach. I thought it was funny when Matt Rhule, the Panthers coach, said, "I'm not going to tell anyone what to do." My first thought was, that's kind of your job. That's what a coach does. He tells people what to do, and there's a real strategic component here. It's going to be easier for the individual. It's going to be easier for the team if guys are vaccinated. It's 2019 rules, not 2020 rules, and if one team has everyone vaccinated, it's a lot easier for them to bond, to have the right camaraderie, to not have the issues and distractions that go along with meetings and masks and daily testing and just everything that can get in the way of what you're trying to do. And that's why I think the Steelers are one of the teams that have almost everybody vaccinated, because Mike Tomlin, the coach of Pittsburgh, is able to go to his guys one by one and say, this is what you need to do, and they do it. And some of the coaches are fearful that they're touching a third rail if they start telling guys that they need to go get vaccinated for competitive reasons, because so many people feel strongly about not getting vaccinated, either because the players don't care about getting COVID or because they're worried about magnetic crystals or computer processors in the vaccine, even though plenty of players will take plenty of things to keep them on the field without giving a second thought to the side effects or what's really in the thing that they're taking, if it means it keeps them on the field. And that's what the vaccine does. It keeps them on the field.
Do you think there truly is or will be a competitive advantage for those teams like the Steelers and others who basically have their roster vaccinated, as opposed to, let's say, a team that's hovering around 60%?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about not having to have those guys who aren't vaccinated get tested, not having those guys in masks, not having the chapter and verse COVID protocols that need to be followed to the same extent. And I frankly think the league office is going to be unforgiving in its enforcement of those rules, because the league wants the process to be enough of a pain in the butt that guys will choose to get vaccinated. And I think once they really process it, and I think part of it is, the five stages of grief, anger, denial, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. I think we saw some guys act out last week a little bit, whether it was Joe Mixon of the Bengals, Cole Beasley of the Bills. You vent, you get it out of your system, and then maybe you eventually come around and realize, I just need to do this, or football season is going to be a major pain for me. And I think that's what the NFL and the union have set up here. I think the union wants guys to get vaccinated. The union just doesn't want to be in the position of telling guys that they must go get vaccinated.
Mike Florio on the line with us for Pro Football Talk. In the last 24 hours, Mike Carl Nassib has come out as the first active NFL player to come out and say that he is gay on Instagram. Yep. What was your reaction, and what have you made of the reaction, around the league, other players? And I think he had the number one selling jersey on Fanatics in the last 24 hours. What did you think?
I think the way that the Michael Sam situation was handled 7 years ago probably prompted most players who are gay, and obviously There are people of every sexuality in every walk of life, in every workplace, whatever job it may be, they're there. And I think that players who are gay probably decided, after Michael Sam, there's no reason, there's no benefit, I'm just going to live my life. And I suspect there are plenty of openly gay players, at least open among their teammates. You know, nobody's going to publish a story on TMZ outing someone. Those days are long gone. You could just live your life. For Carl Nassib to stand up and announce his sexuality, it takes a lot of courage, number one. And number two, it pushes the NFL closer to the point where it's not even a news item. It's nothing that anyone stops and thinks about. It's nothing anyone cares about. And I hope we get to that point. Just like with the number of female assistant coaches in the NFL, it's a big story for the first one. It's less of a story for the second one. And hopefully we get to the point where it's not even a story. It's just this person got hired for this job, and the gender is immaterial.
As you can imagine, in this market, the Julio Jones trade has created quite the discussion piece in this market. And so I want to ask you, because we set over underlines on catches for this season for Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry carries and everything. But I want to focus on Julio Jones, because I did not think that it was going to be kind of a split. I mean, a kind of a house divided. And I'll just let you know, but the over-under that I set on catches was 79.5 for this season. And I took the over, and I thought everybody would take the over, and boy, was I wrong. Like I said, it's a house divided. It seems like, depending on who you ask, there are people that think that he will definitely be the Julio Jones that we've seen basically his entire career, and others think that his numbers will be down. Right now, one, what did you think of the trade the Titans made? And two, what do you think Julio is bringing to the table to the Titans?
Well, I wasn't surprised by the trade, because a week or two before it happened, the prevailing thought in league circles was that Julio Jones was going to end up a member of the Titans for a second-round pick. And there was some extra draft compensation on the back end in order to make the Falcons think that they got more than what they got for Mohamed Sanu in 2019 and what they turned around and gave to the Ravens for Hayden Hurst, the tight end that they traded for. They thought Julio Jones should get a first-round pick. The dynamics of, number one, his cap number, his salary, guaranteed salary, his desire to get a new contract, which will happen if he has a big year in 2021. I understand what the Titans are doing, but what it does is it raises the bar. It's no excuses. You've got four great players at three important positions, two great receivers, great running back, great quarterback. It reminds me of the Colts when it was Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James, Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, the Rams when they had Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt. To have two receivers that you can't double both of them all the time, somebody's going to be open, but there's still only one football. So I think that's why there would be a concern about Julio Jones getting 79 catches. I'm not worried about health. I frankly think that hamstring injury, I don't know this, but I think the hamstring injury last year, he was in a situation where they were competitive and he was happy and he knew he was going to be there, he may have played through that injury. Hamstring is something that, you know, if you just aren't into it and if you aren't up to it, there's no reason doing it, because you're going to risk further injury. And I think it's the kind of injury that maybe in Tennessee he would play through. And I'm not concerned about him from a health standpoint. I come back to there's only one football, and we've got a new offensive coordinator in Todd Downing. You need to hope that it all works and it all clicks. And like I said, the bar is high. There's going to be an expectation that this offense is great right out of the gates, and it may take some time.
Mike Florio is with us, ProFootballTalk.com. And Mike, what do you know about Downing? We're all trying to get to know him here. He's been here, but he's been behind the scenes, and now all of a sudden he takes over the keys to this, you know, Ferrari or whatever you want to call the Titans offense. High expectations for sure, and some big challenges. What's your thought on his background and his readiness for this?
Well, you know, he was the coordinator of the Raiders team that was 12-4, and Derek Carr was in the MVP conversation until the Thursday night game against the Chiefs, where I think he kind of fell out of that discussion. And then Carr suffered the broken leg Christmas Eve 2016, and that 2016 it was, and that's what kind of washed things out for the Raiders that year. And Downing ended up gone when John Gruden came back, and And he had this kind of this dramatic fall where he went back to Minnesota, his home state, and had a low-level job there in 2018 and then landed in Tennessee last year, I believe, or the year. I can't remember. The timeline's not 100% firm in my mind, but he spent a short time in Minnesota again with a low-level job, had a low-level job initially with the Titans, and now, boom, here he is. Hey, offensive coordinator. He's been one before, but, you know, you've got some pretty good players that are being entrusted to your offense, and it's going to be a challenge to incorporate everyone, to get the most out of everyone. And, you know, it's not about saying, well, this is my system. It's about saying, these are my players, and I'm going to design my system to get the most out of my players. And, you know, there's reason to be optimistic, but we just have to see how it plays out. I mean, Vrabel trusts him enough to give him the job. That's a good sign, but we just have to see how it plays out.
You will have great perspective on this, and we seem to be kicking this around a lot on our show. We know the standard is the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. It's also a very deep conference where you start listing teams that are all really good. The Titans are somewhere on the list, but in your mind, what they've done in the offseason, particularly now this move with Jones, how far is the gap between the Chiefs and them?
I'd say it's still fairly significant because the Chiefs went out and put the pedal to the metal to try to address their weaknesses, whether it's offensive line, whether it's picking up Jerron Reed, who they got for a steal when his situation imploded with the Seattle Seahawks. So I think the Chiefs will be better than they were last year, which is kind of scary because other than the Super Bowl, they won every game they wanted to win except the game against the Raiders. The loss to the Chargers week 17 was a meaningless game that Patrick Mahomes didn't play in. So the Chiefs are still the platinum standard in the AFC, and everyone else is chasing them. But the Titans inch closer into the discussion, into the conversation, and you know, maybe they eventually get another crack at the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. And as you guys well know, that was a game where the Titans led by double digits twice in the first half in the 2019 AFC Championship. And somebody's going to emerge, whether it's the Ravens, whether it's the Bills, whether it's the Chargers, whether it's the Steelers or the Browns. But the Titans now, neck and neck, I think the betting odds at PointsBet went to both the Colts and the Texans plus 110 to win the division. So they're exactly in the same spot. And it's going to be a hell of a battle to see who wins that division. But whoever comes out of that division may be in great shape to compete with the other teams in the AFC. But still, somebody's got to hope that they catch the Chiefs flat-footed, like peeking ahead to a rematch with the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl or something like that, and maybe you can disrupt it before they get there.
We're talking to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. And what team do you think, whether it's AFC or NFC, that was a playoff team but a legit contender? I'm not really counting the NFC East last year. What team are you worried the most about taking a step back? Is it Pittsburgh? Is it Baltimore? Like, how would you answer that?
Well, it's easily the Green Bay Packers if Aaron Rodgers doesn't show up. And even if he does, he's sufficiently disgruntled, and that storyline will be significantly large this year that it could create a distraction and a disruption, and the team that was 13-3 each of the last 2 years could see a setback. They have a new defensive coordinator in Joe Barry. We'll see how he does with that defense week one against the Saints. If Jameis Winston ends up being the starter for New Orleans, last time Joe Barry saw Jameis Winston, he hung 55 points on the Rams when Barry was on the staff there in 2019. So the defense is going to be significant, and this Rodgers situation, obviously, if he's not there, scratch him off the list as a high-end contender until they prove otherwise. If he is there, it still raises a question. The Steelers, I don't know why they brought back Ben Roethlisberger. I thought it was time to move on. I think the Steelers got themselves convinced that if they just address this area, this area, this area, they'll be fine. And maybe they will. But I worry about Roethlisberger's body breaking down at 39. He had the elbow thing 2 years ago. Last year, his knees were shot by the end of the season. And now there's an extra game to play, and he's another year older. And I've said all along, I think by the end of November, both sides are going to regret that Roethlisberger came back for another year. So I think Steelers and Packers are two teams that I would watch very carefully.
So how do you think this Rodgers thing does play out? I know Devontae Adams said that the Packers players aren't really talking about it. He's not there. They're just doing their thing. But do you feel like that he is going to start week one in Green Bay or elsewhere, or just continue to sit out?
I think he'll show up in Green Bay and he'll play one more year. And there was something that Matt LaFleur, the coach of the Packers, said last week at a press conference on the way out the door for the offseason program. I watched it and it caught my eye, caught my ear as well. He was asked why they have four quarterbacks for OTAs. And it's a fairly basic question, because even though Jordan Love's taking the first-team reps, you've got a bunch of individual drills. You need arms to throw the ball to all those guys on the roster that are trying to run routes and catch passes. But what LaFleur said was, as we get closer to training camp, we may be making some moves. We'll have more clarity as we get closer to camp, whatever the case may be. And it made me think, number one, LaFleur knows what Rodgers is going to do, because why wouldn't Rodgers tell him? He's not mad at LaFleur. And number two, LaFleur knows that Rodgers is showing up, and he stopped short of letting the cat out of the bag. And that was the moment that I thought, even though Rodgers is all in with creating this beautiful mystery and keeping everyone guessing and reserving the right to say, what's the big deal? Why is everyone looking at me? Even though he wants everyone to pay attention to him, I think he's going to be there because he doesn't have any other option. And he's got maybe 4 years left. Is he going to give up 25% of his remaining career just because he doesn't like the boss? The point I've been making for the last 2 weeks, who likes the boss anywhere? I mean, at any job, all the way up to upper management, who likes upper management? You guys don't have to answer that. I for the record, like upper management at NBC. But so what? How many, you know, if you love your coworkers, and he said that, I love the teammates, I love the coaches, I love the fans, okay, then he'll be there.
Mike, last one on my end. We've talked about the trade that John Robinson made for Julio Jones, but looking at his tenure since he's been the general manager of the Titans, he's never been afraid to be aggressive, to make those moves, but we've also seen some moves that he's made, whether it's free agency or draft picks, they've been bad, and they've been very bad, and those are going to count on his resume. When you evaluate his job overall, how do you look at John Robinson?
Well, I think it's still incomplete. It's still a mixed bag, and this Julio Jones thing could be an all-in move to try to rectify some of the mistakes. I mean, last year, first-round pick completely wasted on a guy who never played and never will play in the NFL. So I know there's an element of roll of the dice with everyone that you take, but, yeah, at some point you get judged on your results, and we'll see. You know, I just wonder how all in everyone was on the pursuit of Julio Jones, because it really does raise the bar. It raises expectations. And if it fails, the team doesn't become a Final Four team, it creates more potential scrutiny for everyone as well. So I just wonder if everyone really wanted to do this, and if Robinson saw this as a way to throw kind of a Hail Mary and get past mistakes to be forgotten. You know, they took a hell of a risk with Bud Dupree, and yeah, it's a real contract with real guarantees. Usually when a guy's coming off an ACL tear, the way it's structured is the team's got an out, a pretty easy out after 1 year. And I may be remembering incorrectly, but because a bunch of deals were coming through at the same time. But I remember looking at Bud Dupree's contract and thinking, oh, my God, this is a real contract for a guy coming off a torn ACL. So they're taking a lot of risks. At some point, the risks got to pay off, or upper management will have a problem with the employee instead of the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, we appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
All right, take care, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, NBC, does a fantastic job for them, and a lot of NFL stories. And again, Tim Hasselbeck usually joins us on Wednesdays at noon, but off this week, and we'll return next week. So we'll get into more on some of the things you just heard. But Willie, you're going to tell us about Loan Pronto.
I'd be glad to do that. Great stuff with Mike Florio. And just a quick reminder, if you miss any of our interviews, we have them all in podcast form. So always keep that in mind. Just wherever you get your podcasts, you can subscribe to Darren, Donick, and Chase. Just search it that way. So many great interviews that we have around the calendar, including that one with Mike Florio. That was excellent. It's great to catch up with him. Loan Pronto, my message today is going to be directed at the veterans out there. I know there's a lot of you out there, and if you have a VA home loan, stop and listen to this message I'm about to tell you from Loan Pronto, because you can refinance now and snag a new rate in the twos. Yes, in the twos, and that's an important thing. That's going to save you money. It gets even better. You can do all this with no appraisal, no income documentation, and no cash due at signing. Mortgage rates have come down, and veterans need to act now. Loan Pronto specializes in VA streamlined loans. They can even cover all of the closing costs, and you'll love all. They're all digital, no-hassle process. It's going to be so much easier for you to get this done. Most loans close in 14 days. So call Loan Pronto now or go to loanpronto.com. They also have options where you can refinance, get cash out of your home's equity up to 100% of its value, get cash to pay off credit cards, or do that home improvement project. So veterans, listen up. And really goes for all of you. Call Loan Pronto. Find out what they can do for you. They've got a great process to offer you. 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. That's 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender. NMLS 166-1781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero costs.